Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to podcast number 11 of Near Miss Listen and Learn. Thanks to Firehouse.com for making it a reality, and I'm your host for the podcast, John Tippett. Worked as a battalion chief in Montgomery County for 32 years, retiring July 1st, as a matter of fact, and moving on to the City of Charleston Fire Department. I'll be serving as deputy chief of operations. I also serve as a project manager for the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the organization that manages the National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. And joining us today for this edition of Near Miss Listen and Learn is Jim Rist, who's the voice of our reports. Jim's a program coordinator with National Programs Department of the IFC. He has over 35 years of fire service experience. He's a life member of the West Haverstraw Volunteer Fire Department, Volunteer Hose Company Number 2 in New York State, as well as a retired federal chief officer from West Point Fire and Emergency Services. We also have with us today Amanda McHenry. Amanda is the program assistant for the Near Miss Reporting System. Many of you may recognize her name from the Report of the Week. This edition's topics are the beginnings of the Safety, Health, and Survival Week for this year. The Fire and EMS Safety, Health, and Survival Week runs from June 14th to June 20th. This year's theme, Protect Yourself, Your Safety, Health, and Survival Are Your Responsibility, encourages chiefs and fire and EMS personnel to focus on what they personally can do to manage risk and enhance their health and safety. This theme reflects the need for personal responsibility and accountability within a strong safety culture, recognizing that the job has its own hazards, and recognizing, of course, that we all have a responsibility to make sure each and every one of us gets to go home. The four topics for this year's focus are emergency driving, health, survival, and safety leadership. They spotlight the areas where fire service continues to see injuries and fatalities caused by actions and omissions relative to each of these four factors. As most of you know, rapidly leading causes of firefighter fatality are vehicle collisions, and we also run into that perennial problem of heart and circulatory-related diseases. The changes that are focusing on this year are necessary to reduce these tragedies. We'll address each of them in more detail as we do the report reviews with this edition. We're encouraging all firefighters to take time out during the week of June 14th to assess their role and contributions to each of those four topics. Are you doing everything you can during your emergency response? Are you taking best care of yourself for your family's sake and your colleagues? Are you looking out for each other when it comes to survival? And if you're in any sort of leadership role, and nearly every firefighter is in some sort of a leadership role, taking the bold steps when it comes to doing the job as safely as possible. In this episode, we're going to look at some of the group reports that were pulled from the files of firefighternearmiss.com and use them as the basis for the podcast discussion. These groups of reports can be found on the resources page of firefighternearmiss.com, and then they're also going to be posted on the Radio at Firehouse website there. So our first topic for today is emergency driving, and then we're going to couple that with health. The emergency driving topic is the one that draws a significant amount of attention and leads to a lengthy debate. Fire service has witnessed several high-profile collisions involving fire apparatus and fire apparatus versus civilian vehicles in recent months. I think we're all fairly familiar with the events that have occurred in several fire departments across the country. One thing is for certain, the times are certainly changing when it comes to that blanket right-of-way that fire and emergency vehicles used to enjoy in cases. There are a number of factors now that affect emergency response. They include traffic congestion, apparatus handling, the need for speed, and then last but not least, there's the litigation factors that come into play. While we should never be fearful of the courts, because everybody at any time can file a lawsuit, we certainly have to be prepared to protect ourselves to the highest possible degree. The safety focus for this year focuses on emergency driving in three specific areas: lowering speed, wearing seat belts, and stopping at intersections. If you think about the things that are occurring in the fire service today when it comes to vehicle collisions, I think it's pretty clear that these three topics are the ones that generate the most discussion. And there are simple actions that can be taken to reduce the near-misses, collisions, and fatalities that occur. So let's jump right into our first sample report from the group reports. This report is 09122, so it's a recent account. I'm going to turn the table over to Jim here for our discussion. Jim?
All right, thanks, John. The event description. While responding to an automatic fire alarm with a two-piece engine company, we approached the city circle with traffic and noticed a small passenger vehicle stopped and slightly to left of traffic flow. Without hesitation, the engineer of the lead engine went around the right side of the civilian vehicle with no slowing. As soon as the lead engine passed by, the driver of the civilian vehicle thought to go right for sirens and attempted to do so, narrowly missing side impact on the trailing engine. If the trailing engineer had not had situational awareness and had not been driving with due regard, he would not have been able to slow and avoid the collision. Lessons learned. Always have situational awareness no matter what task is being completed. 2, drive with due regard. 3, never pass vehicles on the right. 4, have better driver's training in place. And 5, have officer or firefighter in charge, whoever that might be, in control of all personnel to include the engineer. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Jim. Well, this report goes to great lengths of addressing the very issues that are part of the safety focus this year. The unpredictability of driving situations is really the predictable factor for our emergency response. The one thing that we can always count on is that we never know what the other drivers are going to do. The two fire apparatus drivers in this report provide contrasting approaches to that similar situation, and it demonstrates the value of anticipating what that civilian driver might do when we approach, and then also the value of using the lowered road speed. Some of our apparatus drivers or operators out there attempt to drive in an aggressive fashion to force civilian drivers into a certain location or a certain action. That becomes a practice that can have devastating results. The civilian drivers get confused. They don't know what we're trying to tell them or convey because we're leaning hard on the sirens or the air horns. They don't understand what we're trying to do with them, even when you're doing hand gestures. So the best practice here, and in all situations involving emergency response, is to expect that other driver that's on the road to do the most unthinkable thing you can think of, which is pull out in front of you as you're trying to pass, fail to stop as you're entering the intersection, or fail to yield. There's been a multitude of driving requirements out there in the states. Some have now said to pull to the nearest curb. However, there's an entire generation or more of drivers that were taught to pull to the right, and our records are just full of places where somebody's in the far left lane and they pull across maybe two or three lanes of traffic to get to the right curb. Another recommendation there is keep yourself as the driver alert by focusing only on the driving aspects of the vehicle. Check your mirrors, watch your speed, keep an eye out for traffic. Don't work the sirens or air horns or radios. Leave that to the officer on the rig. If you're on the apparatus by yourself, say you're driving a tanker or tender or some vehicle like that, set the electronic siren and just let it go the way it is. Let the officer on the rig handle the rest. Other recommendation that comes to light is maintaining a sterile cab. That comes from our crew resource management world, where we talk about making sure that only job-related business is being discussed while you're in the cab on an emergency response. Make sure you get the rest of the crew involved to act as the lookouts for the traffic hazards. So thanks very much for that first report. Again, that's report number 09122, and it sets a great example for discussing the emergency driving topics there. There are also a number of other reports in the group reports that you can marry up with that one. So let's move on to our second topic for today, and that's health. The focus on firefighter and EMS provider health has sharpened in the last 15 years. The stresses of the job have been recognized. We know now that they take their toll physically and mentally, And most of that is a result of a lack of rest, poor diet because of call load, increased exposure to carcinogens on the emergency scene, and the mental strain that comes with dealing with the pain and suffering we get to witness and partake in. This increased focus here has resulted in several initiatives that we've talked about in the past but bear repeating in this episode. So as we go through this next feature report, let's begin to think about the things that we know are out there to begin to help us and not put off the fact that there are avenues out there to improve our efforts to make us last a little bit longer in the job. The next report we're going to hear is report number 08247. The report's been excerpted for this presentation because it's a pretty lengthy report. Again, the full account is available in the search reports feature by typing in 08247 in that box, or you can go to the Safety, Health, and Survival Resources page at firefighternearmiss.com, or keep an eye out for the posted reports on the podcast here. I'll turn it back over to Jim.
Thanks, John. The event description. My ladder company was dispatched as part of a box assignment for a reported fire on the roof of a restaurant. That night, the staffing on the ladder truck was the normal staffing of two, driver and tillerman. I was working my regular position as tillerman with a driver from another shift on overtime. En route communications was advised of fire showing on the roof by one of our fire marshals who was in the area. As we arrived on scene, we positioned the truck to ladder the roof of the one-story ordinary construction restaurant. Units on scene had already accessed the roof and determined that roofers working on the roof had already extinguished the fire. As my driver laddered the roof, I donned the rest of my gear and SCBA and grabbed a saw and pike pole to go to the roof. I walked the aerial, which was at a low angle to the roof, where I waited to see if there was any need for my tools. While at the tip of the aerial, I started to experience mild chest pains, nausea, and shortness of breath. I attributed it to a cold that I had been fighting over the previous weeks, and to the dinner we had just eaten. I returned to the turntable where the shortness of breath was more noticeable. Again, I just thought, I am out of shape. It's the cold I have. It's cold outside. It's the new guys cooking, or anything to put my mind at ease. As I got back on the ground, I took off some of my gear, and my driver asked if I was okay. I was sweating heavily for the little amount of work I had done, and the nausea was getting worse. I figured that if I just got dinner out, then I'd be fine. The medic unit arrived and transported me to the local ER, where I was kept overnight for observation. The whole time, I never felt any sharp pains that you would associate with a heart attack. However, I knew things weren't right when a few of the brothers arrived at the ER, and I could see them watching the monitor. The next morning, I was advised that I was being sent to a hospital for a catheterization. They thought it was a blockage, and that I would be out of the hospital the next morning. After getting to the hospital, things happened quickly, and I was in the cath lab within the hour. I can't remember much until I got back to my room where the doctor was talking with my wife and she was crying. That's when the doctor told me there were no blockages and that my heart had weakened to about 20% capacity. He started telling me about pacemakers and defibrillators and everything else. However, the one thing that stood out was when he told me, had you not had this checked, when you did, it would have killed you. Later, I found out that my ladder company was first in another fire later in the shift. Lessons learned. It took a lot for me to realize that something was wrong and to let the other firefighters take care of my problem. I thought I could fix it myself. Only later did I realize that I couldn't have fixed things that night. My suggestions are for others to listen to to what their bodies are telling them. I have had several other brothers tell me that they have had shortness of breath just climbing the stairs in the firehouse. Moreover, each one of them has said that they have not seen a doctor because they are afraid that they won't be allowed to return to work. The only thing I can say to that is I would rather be told that than to have someone knock on my door and tell my family I have some bad news. I found that a regular normal stress test would not have found my condition, but it might have helped if it were done yearly. I hope that others can be honest with the doctor when they get their physicals or other tests. My department does stress tests every other year and the physicals on the off years of the stress tests. Do them at the same time so that it can be assured that the results are immediately available. I actually was the third heart-related case in almost a year in my department. Luckily, all three are having positive outcomes at this point. Back to John.
Thanks, Jim. Well, this feature report pretty much speaks for itself. It reminds us of the importance of taking good care of ourselves and listening to our bodies, and then also the importance of having a good medical surveillance program that's available out there. The price we pay for this privilege to be part of this industry in many cases is way too high given the time that we spend on the job. So in order for us to maximize that investment of our time and then also ensure that we have the longest longevity possible with our family and our colleagues and ourselves, we should heed the messages that are out there through the IFF Wellness Fitness Initiative, the good information that's coming out of a number of different fronts. That's available all over the web and any place else that has to do with firefighter health and safety. And that way, we'll make sure that our fire service careers are long and full and enjoyable, backed up by a long and full enjoyable retirement. We're going to take a quick break right here, and then we'll be back with the second half of the podcast.
Hello, everyone. In light of Safety Week, we encourage you to evaluate your personal safety awareness by taking the Safety Self-Assessment Quiz. As you walk through the safety self-assessment quiz, you will be asked to rate everyday safety acts on a personal scale from always to never. At the end, you will be given a firefighter EMT safety type, along with suggestions and tools for how to become safer and healthier on the job. The quiz can be accessed on firefighternearmiss.com's homepage in the Check It Out box. It will also be available on the 2009 Safety Week daily planning page at ifc.org/safety week. With only 10 questions total, the quiz only takes a moment and can help you become a safety advocate in the fire services effort to bring everyone home safe. We will be collecting data for the quiz through June 21st, so please go online and take the quiz today.
Hey, thanks, Amanda. Well, we're back for part two of this edition of Listen and Learn, and we're going to look at two other topics in the second half of the podcast. One will deal with survival, and then the last one will deal with safety leadership. So our podcast might be running just a little bit longer than usual. However, the importance of the Safety, Health, and Survival Week is it just can't be overlooked here. So as we jump back into topics three and four, let's talk about firefighters and other emergency responders. They'll oftentimes find themselves in pretty desperate situations for two primary reasons. Usually by their own actions and the actions of others. And even though that may be, they may be sort of simplistic or overly recognizable, it's amazing how many times in the after-action reports or discussions you have with people that they won't have realized the importance of what they did or did not do. So the personal responsibility focus of this year's Safety, Health, and Survival Week encourages firefighters to raise their level of vigilance regarding surroundings, conditions, and threats. And 8 points were brought to light for the survival section there. They include knowing your buildings and the construction, having a size-up checklist that you follow rigidly, take that 360 lap around the structure whenever and wherever it's possible, read the smoke, and we taught in fire situations, know your tools and equipment, inside out, upside down, become familiar with the rules of engagement, knowing when to take risks, what risks to take, and how and when those risks should be taken. Learn and practice a good accountability system so you can keep track of where people are, and then remaining calm and in the wake of great disaster. We're going to jump right into our third report for the day that deals with the survival topic, and that's report number 07890. And it can be found in the accountability section of the survival group reports. Jim?
Thanks, John. The event description. We were dispatched to assist at a structure fire with the mutual aid department. Our department was sent for RIT and tender operations. The RIT team arrived and staged at the A/D corner of the structure. Our RIT did a 360 of the building, set ladders, check conditions, the number and locations of crews working, and stood ready. About 20 minutes into the response, crews lost water for a short time and were forced to retreat. After water supply was reestablished, the crews made a second aggressive attack. About 10 minutes into the second attack, the conditions rapidly deteriorated. After a quick consult, which lasted less than 20 seconds, with command, the evacuation order was given and air horns sounded. Crews were attempting to retreat when there was a flashover. The RIT was activated due to lack of accountability of two crew members. The RIT made their way into the first floor, did a quick search, and found one firefighter wandering in the first floor hallway, dazed and confused. He was assisted to the front door and handed it to waiting firefighters from the RIT support. The crew then made their way to the second floor landing, which was the other firefighter's last known location. Following the hose line, there were no other firefighters located. The RIT was cut off by fire that was coming now from a first floor room, across the ceiling, and then across the stairway. The fire was hit from a hose line manned by additional RIT members and allowed other RIT members to egress to the front door. At this point, it was determined that all firefighters were accounted for and out of the structure. Lessons learned. The function of command staff was needed. The IC attempted to do too much, and the span of control was too great. Other department chiefs assisted with getting this under control. There was a need for a committed accountability officer. The accountability officer was not keeping accurate records of crew locations or job tasks. There was only an attendance system initially until a new accountability officer was assigned. If the accountability would have been in place, we would have known there was only one firefighter missing. Make sure that all firefighters are trained with the knowledge of an accountability system. Have all firefighters understand the RIT function and what the need of every firefighter is if the RIT is deployed. There is no real way to change the fast-changing fire conditions except to never do an interior attack with the risk of potential injuries of firefighters. John?
Thanks, Jim. As we take a look at this report and we look at the survival factors that are involved there, we see many of the functions that occur in other firefighter accounts of line of duty death and injury, where command is overwhelmed, they lack the necessary staff, the committed accountability officer becomes an afterthought, the department has an attendance system that dovetails or duplicates an accountability system, but in essence only tells you who is on the scene, not where they are. So it's critical that we extend that accountability further so that people are aware of where the other firefighters or commands aware of where firefighters are working in the building. The strong points here that the RIT company had conducted, or the RIT operations had conducted a 360 when they got on the scene. That's the best way to get to know the building, the fire and smoke conditions all the way around, the keys to the interior floor layout because it can the size and location of windows, for instance, the location of the firefighters, that is, the firefight is mounted inside. Those kind of tips or those kind of points are gained from listening to the interior sounds, seeing the flashlights bobbing through the smoke, and then listening for the radio traffic. The accountability process, when it's really in place, reduces the risk to the RIT personnel. When we know people, when a mayday is called and we know exactly where the firefighter is in the structure, or we can get really close to where they are, It makes it a lot easier for RIT to go to work and control the risks to themselves. Last but not least, maintaining an effective span of control goes to great lengths to maintain composure and calm on the scene. Now let's go ahead and move to our last topic for this edition, and that's the safety leadership. The safety, health, and survival topic is aimed at chief officers primarily, but in many respects, as mentioned at the opening, firefighters of all ranks supervise somebody, either formally or informally. So even though this section is targeted for chiefs in this week's Safety, Health, and Survival Week, pay close attention to the tips you might need for later in your career. E.M. Kelly said that the difference between a boss and a leader is a boss says go, and a leader says let's go. That contrasting point between the boss and the leader is the nucleus of safety leadership. The most important function an officer or any firefighter in a supervisory role plays is that of a safety leader. Safety leadership calls for courage that is not unlike the courage it takes to crawl down to the burning building or crawl into the burning building. It will not win popularity contests in a lot of cases, but it will set clear parameters for subordinates to operate in and positively demonstrate the one thing firefighters care about more than anything else, that's knowing how much you care as their supervisor. So let's take a look at our final report for this edition. It's report number 06357. Jim?
Thanks, John. The event description. On the 4th of July, a ladder company and engine company were traveling to two neighboring communities for parades. One parade was at 0900, and the other parade was at 1100 hours. En route to the first parade, two members of the six-member ladder company rode a distance of 6 miles to the next town, standing on top of the aerial turntable. They had to duck under a railroad bridge and many tree branches. The engine company following the ladder company witnessed the behavior and took no action. 2 hours later, while traveling about 9 miles to the next parade, the three members of the ladder company rode standing on the aerial ladder turntable. On this trip, the engine company did not witness the events because they took a different route. An off-duty firefighter who saw the ladder truck driving down the state highway with the crew on top called the fire chief by phone to report the problem. The department has a written SOG requiring all personnel to ride in the cab and wear seatbelts whenever the truck is in motion. The officer of the ladder company was in charge of the parade detail. The officer, driver, and members of the ladder company who rode the exterior of the truck have all been suspended. One member of the ladder company who rode in the cab was formally reprimanded for not speaking up and conveying concerns to the driver or officer. The officer and driver of the engine company were formally reprimanded for failing to take any action when they witnessed the original offense. Lessons learned. I'm not sure what lessons have been learned. All of the offending parties said they knew what they did was wrong, but they just didn't think or they got caught up in the fun of the day. Three members who didn't directly participate, a firefighter on the ladder who rode in the cab, the officer of the following engine company, and the driver of the engine, all said that at the time they didn't feel it was their place to tell the ladder officer what to do, or they felt their concerns would have been ignored. While I don't think this very event will ever happen again, I worry about other obvious lapses of safety will go unnoticed or ignored in the future. Only 2 weeks prior to this event, on Firefighter Safety Stand Down Day, the department did an extensive driver safety program that involved a review of the safe riding procedures. We had also recently received a department line of duty death from a driving incident 20 years ago as part of a month-long focus on safety. Much of June was devoted to driving safety. To have this event occur is frustrating and makes me wonder what I'm doing wrong as chief and how to prevent these types of events in the future. And then there's a reviewer's note. All personnel must be reminded it is their responsibility to point out unsafe acts. It is important to promote a safety culture that is supported from the fire chief at the top of the organization down to the newest firefighter. Crews need to know to watch out for each other at all times. John?
Thanks, Jim. The multiple failures that occur here are not unique to this fire department by any stretch of the imagination. Kudos go out to the fire chief and for the actions that he took in this particular case in order not only to fix the problem in his own department, but to point out to others what can take place within their own department. In situations and scenarios all across the industry, firefighters and officers who should be taking action avoid it for a variety of reasons that we should all be familiar with. More than anything else, it wasn't my responsibility, just as they pointed out that they didn't think it was their place to bring it to the truck officer's attention. There is a whole host of training opportunities and information out there about how to talk up the chain of command, about how to recognize when it's time to step in and say things. Most of that is based in the crew resource management world there. They also talk about there was a higher-ranking officer there that didn't act, and that's a sticky situation by all stretches, but it's a common recitation that we need to correct. And again, the fire chief of this organization, as frustrated as he was, stepped up and did what needed to be done. Recognized that people made mistakes here or made errors, but they made conscious decisions to violate policies that they should have known that. The fact here that he acts in this near-miss event speaks volumes about his particular leadership and commitment to safety and a concern for the personnel. It's never easy to discipline people, but in the long view, it's probably better that these folks experience a little bit of suspension versus termination or a funeral. The focus that we're about to embark on this week of Safety, Health, and Survival Week 2009 has to be driven by a belief that a difference can be made in our driving habits, health, survival, and leadership. I recently had a conversation with a colleague of mine who left the service way too early because of injuries and a mentality that they suffered, or a mentality that he lived by, which was getting hurt was part of the job. He says that since he's retired, there isn't a day that goes by that he doesn't regret taking better care of himself because he would still be working. His list of injuries that occurred while engaged in what he looks back on now is pretty foolhardy endeavors, such as aggressively fighting a fire in an abandoned farmhouse in the middle of a field, stepping off of a moving pumper to lay out, and falling through a weakened roof, were things that that put him off the job for a period of time, but he eventually came back a little bit more stooped and a little bit more pained. The straw that broke the camel's back for this guy was the fact that he was involved in a collision while responding emergency, lights and siren, to a frequently received automatic fire alarm that turned out to be false again. So the bottom line here is that using more sense when we're behind the wheel, staying more in touch with our medical professionals about taking care of ourselves, focusing on things like learning our service area, looking at the building construction, reading smoke, getting a 360 view of the building, and setting a high bar for safety, provides some inarguable directives that have proven and improved firefighter safety while not interfering with actually doing the job. I want to make a push here for listening to the second podcast that will be up later this week, in addition to the other podcasts that are being posted this week by Firehouse. We'll be concentrating on seatbelt use in our next episode, tying back to the 2009 safety calendar and connecting it to Fire EMS Safety, Health, and Survival Week. We're also going to get a chance to speak with one of the nation's leading advocates for seatbelt installation and use in fire apparatus. So we're going to close this episode by saying thanks to our good friends at Firehouse for supporting the podcast program. Thanks to all of you for being out there, and make sure you listen and learn.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.